Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus and I am proud to announce today's program, which is Nick Curto's Holiday Special. And this, I believe, is our first holiday special, so it's a special treat. Greetings and welcome, Nick. How are you, sir?
Thank you. Thank you so much, Hercules. Great to be here. Merry Christmas to you and yours.
Thank you.
Finally
happy
here, the big day.
Yours as well.
The big day, and it's been quite a day for all of us on many levels, for sure. Very special day, and we have a program taking us from the time we were very small children and talking about either Christmas or other holidays associated with December. So we're going to do that, and then we're going to get into, with my guests, what their early memories were of Christmas or the holidays that their families celebrated. And I think we've got some very interesting stories here. And we have dear friends, of course, Michael and Diane Duncan, and we have Hal Rainbow, who is also my partner. And we're going to have Tom Garber, a dear, dear friend, a talented composer, musician, and he's going to join us a little bit later in the program. So, and also, Hercules, I want to ask you a few questions about your growing up and the holidays also. So that's the program.
Awesome. I'm greatly honored, and I will be here, and three of your guests are with us already.
Excellent. Okay, so normally we do the Urantia Book program tonight, and all of us have been studying the Urantia Book that are going to be on the program tonight. But in our earlier life, unless we had parents that were involved in the Urantia Book, we probably were in a home with our parents where they were celebrating other traditions, other religions, or religious beliefs. So we're going to start off with Diane. Diane, when you were growing up, what was your spiritual background with your family?
Oh, sure. My father was First Christian. And so when we were in Long Beach, California, and we're still in California, we would go to the big First Christian church on Pine Avenue, great big three-story church. And my mother would sing solos because she had been an opera singer at Pepperdine University. And
wow.
It was really wonderful. And I got to, what I got to do was take lessons from the choir director, singing lessons with my mother. So Christmas time was really wonderful because my mother usually got the solos. But another thing that was interesting is I had a babysitter because my mother worked in a bank on Pine Avenue in Long Beach, and my father worked. So I had a family called the Gallaghers. They were a German family that took care of me. And they were a big family, about eight children. I mean, really a lot of kids. And they'd haul us all off to the Catholic Church. And I got to go to catechism and got to go there so much because my parents were always busy at work. So I just had the most marvelous time. I'd get all the medals from the nuns, and I loved it.
Oh,
but
wow.
What I loved best was at Christmas in the Catholic Church. The beautiful embroidered robes they'd wear and the beautiful colors and everything decorated. And it was so different than in the plain church that I would go to at First Christian. But anyway, it gave me a really different sense of both, and I loved it.
Interesting. Very interesting background. Thank you so much, Diane, for that. Now we're going to go to Michael. Michael, the same question, please.
Well, hey, thanks. Thank you so much, Nick. I want to say thanks for having us on. We feel very blessed to be with you on Christmas Day here. And we had a wonderful program last night. We were so happy that you were a guest on our show, so we're returning the favor here. But, yes, we are Urantia Book readers, and I'm a past president of Urantia Book Los Angeles Society. And, of course, you're a past president of the New York Society, and Diana's been on the board. But my parents, my parents weren't really into the Urantia book. I grew up Methodist Christian.
Oh, okay.
In Upland, which is by Ontario, in Southern California, about an hour and a half north of here, north of Mission Viejo, here where we are. But it was a beautiful brick church, on a main avenue called Euclid Avenue. I grew up Methodist there, and we went to the Christmas programs and the Easter programs. But I was also baptized and confirmed in the Methodist tradition. And it wasn't. And my parents weren't really that religious, to tell you the truth. You know, they believed in God, still do, believe in God, and of course Jesus and Mary. And but it wasn't until about maybe like my first year in college or second year in college, I discovered a book called Way of the Peaceful Warrior, written by Dan Millman. And it got me in touch with, you know, the Zen philosophy, Eastern philosophies, vegetarianism. I'm a vegetarian now. Meditation, mindfulness, Satori, you know, kind of the Eastern philosophy. So I took both. I took both the best of the Western Christian philosophy and this new Eastern philosophy that I was experiencing. And I really tried to develop a spiritual path. And about a year later is when I met Diane. I was 21 at my other college that I transferred to, UC Irvine, and that's where I got my music degree. So Diane and I started exploring, you know, various spiritual traditions, theosophy. Eventually, the Urantia book about 11 years ago, we got really into it. And now here we are, the Sixth Revelation, with our own radio program. And friends like you and Hercules that give us the opportunity to tell what the Celestials are doing now.
What's a wonderful background, very, very diverse. Thank you so much, Michael. That's terrific. We're going to go now to Hal. Hal Rainbow, welcome. And Hal, you have a very different background. Please tell us.
Okay. Hi. It's Merry Christmas to everyone. And I was raised Jewish, raised in the temple, bar mitzvahed. I was also, we were a retailer's family. My father owned a store, so everything in life basically revolved around that store, up to and including most of the horrifying the rabbi when the date of my bar mitzvah was chosen and my father told him that it had to be changed because it landed on Washington's birthday and there was no way he was closing the store for my bar mitzvah.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
As I said, we were
as a Jewish family who owned a store, a major store. So Christmas time came, and did your family decorate for the holidays?
No, we didn't decorate at home. My mother would put out, you know, pine branches or something, but there wouldn't be a tree or anything like that because my
father.
But
in the store though you decorated for Christmas.
The store is a whole other matter. The Sunday after Thanksgiving was officially turned over to Christmas trim. My father's manager was a Christmas fanatic. Anything you could do with Christmas, she had. So in the store, there were something like 11 Christmas trees, all of which had to be decorated to a certain style. I remember the main tree was the general, all different colors. There was the silver tree, the red tree, the white tree, the gold tree.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, they had to be exactly what his manager wanted, or you would do the tree over.
Uh-oh.
And it was, you spent all day decorating the store, which since it was a three-floor store, you could... You know, you get there at 9 in the morning, and you might leave at 10 o'clock at night.
I see.
The two other things about decorating the store, it was always Christmas trim was done when the equivalent of Elf on the Shelf was hung. Up until that point, you were still working.
Now, I'm going to just monopolize
a couple more minutes. The joke of Christmas trim was that when we were older, if you were dating someone, you know, you just explained you couldn't make it that day because you had to do the Christmas trim. If it got a little more serious, you know, if they want to come down and help for a couple of hours, that would be great. You knew it was serious, and you knew you were part of the family when you were told you would show up for Christmas trim. It is required.
Gotcha. Now that store your family had was called Rainbows, correct? Your last name.
Right.
Right, Rainbows,
oh,
right?
Sure.
And, you know, there are still, I see Rainbow stores all around. Now, that your store, the family store, was in Staten Island, but Rainbows
right.
is still a major name around Manhattan. I see Rainbow stores,
oh.
but that
no,
was not
there is,
in
no,
any
no,
way
there's
connected.
No connection in there. My family
no
store had the name because it was a family name. Rainbows, that's a different corporation. They sell completely different things, and they use the name because, you know, they thought it was nice and friendly. So, you know, there is absolutely no connection. Pity of it all. If it was, the stores would still be running, and that would be great. But my father's store was curtains and drapes and that type of thing.
Right. Now, the Jewish holiday, that's also tell us a little bit about that. And that is also in December. Is that correct?
The holiday is Hanukkah, which is the Festival of Lights. The festival is the story of how people taking refuge in the temple. There was one day of holy oil, enough for one day. But the miracle was that it lasted all 8 days till they could get, you know, more of the holy oil in. Hanukkah falls between November and December. So what we would do, you know, again, as a retailer's family, we would light the candles every night on Passover. But
what month was that, Hal? Was that in November or December?
It depends on how it fell. It goes by the lunar calendar, so it does change every year.
Okay, I got it now.
Family being, how should we put this nicely, on the secular side, my nephew started 1 year. Every night you have another candle, so some nights you'd have four or five candles. And my nephew started the gambling game of which candle will burn out first.
Wow, very enterprising, to say the least.
Yes.
Excellent. Wow. Now, Hercules, could you answer the same question, too, about your early religious, spiritual calling with your family? What was that like?
Basically, I was born and raised Greek Orthodox, and I actually attended a Greek Orthodox parochial school for 8 years. During time of grammar school. And because I was Greek Orthodox, I got a very thorough training in the history of the Greek Orthodox Church, also the history of Greece. And they also got into philosophy, mythology, and a lot of other things during that school. So what they didn't count on was the fact that I would resonate more powerfully with the myths than I did with the book. So those stories are what touched my soul and made my soul sing and helped me make sense of my universe. In Greece, Christmas wasn't observed like here. It was observed on January 6th, which was the fall of the lights.
Yeah.
And that's when the wise men actually, according to the Greek tradition, reached the manger and gave their gifts to Jesus. But because we lived here, we celebrated Christmas at the same time as everybody else. And we were used to having our holidays not coincide with other people's holidays. So our Easter also, I think once every 4 or 5 years, corresponds with American Easter, they used to call it. And during the time that I was in parochial school, because I was exposed to other things, I learned about Theosophia and Theuria, which is theosophy, which means divine wisdom or divine insights, and Theuria, which means divine actions or divine deeds. So those were the highest forms that the Olympian religion had reached, as well as the practice of the mysteries. So on my own quest, I went around to see what still existed from these ancient practices, and my life became a game of spiritual hide-and-seek. During this journey, I also encountered the East, like Michael did, and learned about Taoism, and learned about the Zen, and Shintoism, and Hinduism, and Buddhism, and so I traveled. I explored other mythic spiritualities. Part of me never left mythic Greece. And when my traveling was over and I learned what I needed to learn, I returned to what resonated the most, what spoke to my soul the most. So I became very public in my Olympianism. There is no organized structure for Olympianism, or rather more accurately, like with Christianity and every other religion, there are too many individual fragments. So mine is more an individual journey, sometimes with other individuals, but we don't belong to any organized religion or religious structure. My earliest memories of the holidays, the celebration, were the tree. We would get a fresh tree earlier on, and we would spend the time decorating it. And once we got a certain age, I think it was 11 or 12, I don't remember exactly, you can open up your presents on Christmas Eve rather than Christmas morning. So that was a very big bonus. And my parents used to play holiday music in the background. The only one I could really remember with certainty is Burl Ives, Have a Holly Jolly Christmas. He had an album with all these songs.
Absolutely, sure.
And in terms
that's a wonderful background, very varied background. And again, you were on such a spiritual search early on, and how wonderful that you did that, really.
Thank you.
I'm going to go to myself for a second, and then I'm going to ask a question I want everybody to answer. My brief background is that I was born and raised Roman Catholic. One of my aunts at, I think, 17 decided to become a nun in the Catholic Church, and she actually had to run away from home because her father, my grandfather, forbid her to do that, and she felt so strongly about it, she had to leave home and go ahead and do that. She became a Sister Superior, and for all her life, she was a Sister Superior in various convents around New England. Around 18, I thought that I might become a priest. I did consider that. I still feel very close on some levels to some of the Catholic teachings, but I have moved on, and I've now embraced the Rancho book. So briefly, that is my background. Now we're going to go, since Tom Garber is not here yet, he will be. He was involved in another something going on, but he said he'll be here a little later. So we're talking about generally December 25th, but this program is the Arantia, and we're also talking about August 21st. So I'm going to ask Michael, just comment on that, please, December 25th and August 21.
Well, of course, December 25th, the tradition goes back a long, long way. Our sixth revelation studies have taken us back to the Greek, as a matter of fact, as the prototype to the birth of Jesus. If you read, Hercules and Diane and myself, we've read and studied a lot about different spiritual traditions. This Theosophia, which is the ancient wisdom, the God wisdom that pervades basically all truth throughout that's threaded throughout all of the beneficent spiritual traditions throughout the ages. And we've studied a gentleman named Manly P. Hall, and I know Hercules knows about Manly
yes.
P. Hall. Yes. We have a wonderful book that tells all about the Eleusinian mysteries and how Dionysus, the god Dionysus, he went through, he went into the town on an ass, and he was, went through the mysteries that the disciples in the Eleusinian mysteries went through, that they would die and that they would resurrect, and there was also some December 25th, discussions and teachings about December 25th being, the birth of this Christ, this Dionysian Christ, so on and so forth. So December 25th is, the darkness, the winter darkness, winter, or the earth at its darkest point, its coldest point. And we look, of course, toward Easter as the rising, the spring. The spring comes out of the darkness. But the Christmas tree, in ancient Greek was, it was the sprig of the sprig of the evergreen tree to remind us that spring will come. So December 25th, of course, we know is the traditional birth of Jesus, But in the Arantia book, Nick put it so beautifully last night when he read from the life and teachings of Jesus about the birth of Jesus. And how Jesus was born in August, and how the star, the star tradition, came from the myths of the wise men, in such a beautiful story that here in the darkness the light shines and gives us hope, for a new way of life. So the Urantia book, Diane and myself, have gained a tremendous hope and tremendous inspiration from the story of, the birth of Jesus, and, of course, he being the manifestation of the local universe father, Michael, creator son of Nebadon, and his consort, the divine minister. And that's a lot of what the sixth revelation is about, is the local universe father visiting Diane and visiting me, and us telling his story about how he's gathering the celestial hosts at this time to give us a new way. So
right. Well, thank you.
Very nice. The Urantia book gives us a lot of hope for the future.
Boy, that is for sure. That is an understatement. Now, Diane, I want to ask you that we have December 25th, which was picked as a date, and we can talk about that. And, of course, the Urantia book is saying that August 21 at 12 noon was when Jesus was born. So you're now celebrating both days. Is that correct?
Well, what we celebrate it culturally.
Okay.
The thing is, I used to take my children to the San Jose, it was a museum. And that museum always,
museum?
Yes, it was the Rosicrucian Museum in San Jose. And they always taught us that the star that appeared was in 7 B.C., And they would explain the conjunctions, and we would go to the planetarium part and see it. And they also would say, Herod died in 4 B.C., so, that they can't really say that Jesus was born in 1 A.D. or 1 B.C. or 1, year, because Herod died 4 years before that. And, of course, the story is always that Herod, you know, had the soldiers go and search the babies, you know, and all that, and find the Son of Man. So I always thought that it was probably 7 BC because of that, the San Jose. I am a Rosicrucian. And so I tried to bring my children up that way. So we got that very early. So that was decades and decades ago about it. But we celebrate both.
Right. Because, well, so do I. And it's kind of fun to have both holidays to celebrate. And I embrace them both, actually. I think we know now that December 25th was also a huge pagan holiday. And way back when, that is the reason that December 25th was picked as the birthday to celebrate Jesus, because the people at that time wanted to actually diminish the pagan celebration held on December 25th. And so they put the date of Jesus' birth at that day to celebrate, and it worked. Right, and that's such an interesting, right there alone, we could do a whole program on that.
Well, you know, that is just exactly it. Michael was talking to you about that. The Greek god Dionysus was celebrated at December 25th. That was the birthday they gave him. And all of the facts about him that we learned from Manly P. Hall, you know, collaborated that. So we learned that he came into the temple riding on an ass. He turned the water to wine. Dionysus did all those things that we say Jesus did, and he was also crucified and rose from the dead in April, just as we have Jesus. And, of course, his birth date, and he was worshipped as a child on December 25th as an infant, you know, born.
Tremendous parallels then. I mean, you just mentioned some incredible parallels there.
Well,
that,
yes, Dionysus,
most people wouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
He was the god of the wine, you see. The wine.
Yep.
He turned the water to wine. I mean, that was his symbol, was the vine, the vine, but also the wine itself and the purple. So all of these things that we learned from that center, we would go for lectures is what we would do, Nick, and I'd take my children, you know, and they would give us these lectures about all of this, and it was terribly, terribly interesting. It opened our eyes. It's just like the story of the three wise men. You see, in Manly P. Hall, they lectured us that was actually a Sumerian legend, 2,500 BC. The legend of the wise men and the gold and the, you know, incense and frankincense and myrrh from Sumeria, 2,500 BC. All of these wonderful stories have been transposed to bring them up further into more recent times of Christianity.
Right, right. And most people wouldn't have any clue that was actually happening. And all the parallels that you're talking about here, that is quite extraordinary, really, when you think of it.
Well,
now, Hal,
the reason...
Go ahead.
Reason is because we had not translated the Ugarit tablets yet. So all of this information was hidden. When they finally translated the Ugarit tablets and all of these other archaeological tablets, then we found the stories of the flood in the Sumerian stories. We found the stories of the three wise men. We found these stories. But you see, the translations had not really come out, and especially to the public yet.
Incredible. Absolutely. We should do a program just on that alone. That is quite a subject in itself. Now, Hal, I believe I would be correct in saying, in your case, you would celebrate December 25. Also August 21, and also from your Jewish heritage, the other holiday too. Is that right? You have three holidays you're celebrating currently?
Yes, but Hanukkah is not related at all to the Christ story. it has.
Oh, no, no, I know that. I know that. It's a whole separate thing.
So that's, you know, a whole entity to itself. I know December 25th is also, there were two competing religions at that point. There was Mithras, which was a soldier religion, and there was Christianity. Both were, you know, Mithras was described on the 25th. It was the birth of the hero. It was the holiday of the sun. And then when Christianity overrode it, that also became the holiday of the sun. You know, different spelling, of course. And again, there are a lot of parallels there of one taking over the other. Christianity partially won because that religion allowed in women and slaves, where Mithras did not. But if you go up to further north to the Celtic areas, the 25th was also the festival of the sun, because that was the world at its darkest point, but the sun was coming back, and it was the promise of rebirth and the spring and hope and joy and such like that.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, it pays a lot. You know, it's very important. I was always kind of surprised, though, that the birth of Christ didn't correspond with the 21st of June, which would be the, you know, the day of light.
Being interesting.
You know, the longest day, born at noon, would be the height of the day, you know, height of the light. That always struck me as kind of odd, but, you know, that's just kind of the way it worked out.
Now, also, in your life, how you also were exploring other teachings also. I can't remember the name of it. Help me here.
Wicca.
Tell us a little bit about your interest in Wicca, and just very quickly, but just give us some of the major points of that, because you did explore that.
Wicca is a nature religion where you worship the god and the goddess, who is just the male and female aspects of divinity, and it deals with nature and the power that comes from nature, and the circle of nature, the dark, the light. It very much deals with, again, dark, light, rebirth, but it's a more natural rebirth than, say, a godly rebirth.
Okay.
It's not totally a peaceful religion, which is interesting. It's a nature religion.
How do you mean that? Tell me more about that. Tell me more about that, Hal.
Okay. It is, as I said, it's a nature religion. It believes in life. It believes in growth. But some of their stories of the circle of life, there is death. There is not murder, but a form of natural killing, because that's part of nature.
Okay.
And there are certain mythological figures, the Green Man. There's the Seelie Court, which is both the good versus the evil. You know, a lot of things along that line which do crop into it. There's the Golden City, and then there's also the Wild Hunt. So it's a, you know, it's one always reflects the other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay. Well, we might want to do at some point a little more about that. That study that you did. So thank you for that. Now I'm going to go.
You're welcome.
To another whole area here, when that is for the last half of our program. We're already halfway through it, but I'd like to go into your early memories about Christmas. We'll go with that one, and early memories from wherever you happen to be coming from. And I'm going to say just a few things that I remember as a child about Christmas. It was certainly the big day of the year was Christmas for sure. And we would write letters to Santa with listing all the things that we felt as though we deserved, that we wanted. And we would mail that letter to the North Pole, put a stamp on it, and we did that. Of course we did. And children still do things like that. I remember that my dad bought an 8 or 10 foot Christmas tree. It was still very frozen when he brought it into the home, so he put it in the kitchen, And at night, my mother was reading a newspaper in the kitchen. My dad was downstairs looking at one of his games. And my mother saw that the tree was moving and that there was something in the tree. And it turned out to be a little creature, a little furry creature who somehow hung on for dear life and held on to that tree as it was carried from the place where my dad bought the tree on the car roof. He tied it there and then brought it into the house. And the little guy later on, hours later, shimmied down the tree. And my mother started screaming because she saw this little furry thing in the kitchen with her. And she was alone. She got up on a chair and started screaming. My dad went upstairs and said, honey, what's wrong? And she said, look, it was something running around the kitchen. And my dad opened the door and got a broom and kind of hailed the little guy out so we could be safe outside. And my mother finally got down from the chair. So that's one of those little stories that goes on. I'll never forget things like that. Also, another thing that's interesting is we had a cardboard fireplace that we kept in the attic of our home in Springfield, Massachusetts. And we would only bring it down at Christmas time so that we could put our stockings on it. It was made of cardboard. It had white logs in the fireplace itself. And it had red lights with little pinwheels that slowly spun around because of the heat of the electric bulbs. And it did look like there was a flame in the fake fireplace. And I remember as a kid, I cornered my folks and I said, how can Santa come down the chimney because we have a cardboard fireplace without a chimney? And you know what the answer was? Santa is magic and Santa can do anything. And we absolutely bought that. Absolutely. Okay, got it. And I'll never forget that. And we put our stockings, we pinned them on the cardboard fireplace. And wouldn't you know it? Christmas morning, our stockings were full of little treats, and there were presents all around our Christmas tree, and it was a great day to celebrate. My mother and father both came from, I think, 7 or 8 other kids in each of their families, so I had a huge amount of aunts and uncles, and of course, they all were married and had children, so Christmas Day was in our house. And we had a 3-bedroom little white house in Springfield, Massachusetts in the Brightwood section, and all the families would come to our home. So we had wall-to-wall, wonderful company. My mother and father always welcomed them, and we had wonderful food and celebrated. And those are one of the cherished memories of Christmas for me. Now, let's go to Diane. Diane, tell us, please, a little bit about what you remember as a child at Christmas time.
Well, when I was 5 years old, I remember this very well, and I've never forgotten it, Nick. I either had a dream or a vision, and I don't know which. It was too long ago, and I was too little. But I know that I loved all the scenes that I would read about in the Bible, and I started to read very early, and especially sitting in church, I'd have the Bible in my hands. But I remember that I had this dream or vision of a hand, just the hand, not the arm showing, but just a hand that was probably as big as half a room. And I remember I was sitting in the middle of the hand as a little girl, about 5 years old. And the hand lifted me all the way up past the streetlights, past the trees. It took me all the way up into the sky, as far as up above the clouds. And I sat there looking around not myself, like in a circle around myself. And at each point that I would look, I would see like a diorama of some of the scenes of Christmas. I would see a manger with Mary and Joseph and the baby. And then a little bit further around in the sky, I'd see maybe Christmas trees or you know, twinkling lights. And then going around, I'd see the wise men. You know, I was only five. I didn't know anything more. I'd see the wise men and the lambs and the shepherds, and they'd be each grouped. And I was told that they were angels who made these dioramas in the sky for me to see. And that was when I was about five. And I
wow, that is
Christmas.
Absolutely so unique. I've never heard anything like that ever. My goodness.
Wow,
Diane, thank you for that. That is so unusual, really. Now, Michael, please share us, if you will, a memory about, as an early memories of your childhood dealing with Christmas.
Well, okay, that's a little hard to follow there, Diane. That's pretty amazing. And she's
that is. Yeah, you got your work cut out for you, Michael.
And in 2013, she was visited by the local universe father, and it was quite an experience that has changed our lives, by the way, I might add. Well, my early experiences, I have four little snapshots that I wanted to share. The first little snapshot is when I was in preschool. We made Christmas ornaments, and there was this Christmas ornament made out of a toilet paper roll. It was a Santa. So
I love that already.
we had the little beard, you know, the cotton ball beard, and it had a little had a little pipe cleaner on the top, you know, to hang it on the tree.
Yep.
We painted it red, and you know, put a Santa belt on it. And you know that my parents probably still have that ornament today. It went on the tree single year.
Mm-hmm.
Then a little bit later, when I was a little older, a couple years after that, my dad's a CPA, a certified public accountant, retired, but they rented a place down in one of the harbors down here on one of the Southern California beaches. And in the harbor, they would have all the ships put on their Christmas lights, and they'd have a parade on Christmas Eve. And it was just, they'd go through the harbor, and it was just so beautiful.
How interesting.
It was a sight to see, and it was just, and they'd play Christmas music really loudly, and the boats would parade, just absolutely gorgeous. And then
wow.
my third snapshot is we would go every year to my grandmother's house in San Bernardino, California. Her name is Babe, and she passed away a couple years ago at 97.
God bless her.
Yes. But they had a beautiful home, and they had a white flocked Christmas tree. And we'd go there on Christmas Eve every year. But before we would open all of our presents and have dinner and everything, we'd play volleyball in the backyard. And it was just a blast. It was a blast.
Would do that in New England. Let me tell you that with New England winters, that is something we would not be able to do.
Oh, I know. Maybe build a snowman, right, or something?
Exactly. Exactly right.
And then finally is kind of my fourth snapshot is kind of a sad one, you know. So it's like I'm probably you know, 9 or 10 or something like that. And it was a couple days before Christmas Eve, and I was looking for something in the house. And I went into my parents' bedroom, which I hardly ever went into my parents' bedroom, and I opened up the closet door in my parents' bedroom, and I saw some presents. I saw some presents in there, right?
Uh-huh.
And I looked at the presents, and I looked at the tags on the presents.
Oh, no.
And they said, on the little tag, it said, "To Michael from Santa." And
ooh.
That was it. That was the day
That
was the day I learned about Santa.
Wow. Okay, moving on now, because we don't know who's going to be listening to the show, but that is so interesting. Now, Hal, please, was there something about Christmas as a child, even though you're from a Jewish family, that you kind of recall or that you have a vision of?
One thing, since, you know, we didn't have the tree or everything, and Christmas Day was the first day my father was off. So the presents were kept in my parents' room, and you have three little kids who are, you know, up at like 5 or 6 in the morning, and we
you
were
bet.
Not allowed
you
in my
bet.
Parents'
the earlier,
room.
The better.
But we were not allowed into my parents' room till about 9 or 10. So, you know, that was that was a lot of agony for a little. And the other thing, Michael, I went through the exact same thing you did with the presents in the closet.
Oh, did
and
you?
From Santa. And I remember thinking, this was the first time I ever thought, gee, my parents actually lied to me, which was rather shocking.
And they do it so well. Parents do that flawlessly. I mean, really do. This program is on pretty late, so I don't think little kids would be listening to this program.
Oh,
hopefully they're not. Hopefully they're not.
I could take one memory as a child, but jump it up a little.
Mm-hmm.
If that's all right. Or do you want to stick to just childhood memories?
I love that. I love exploring this area. And Hercules, again, if you will, as a small child, what do you remember?
Decorating the tree. That was the primary ceremony. Again, at a certain age, you were initiated into the knowledge that Santa, you know, wasn't the one giving you the presents. But by then you figure it out. Or a cousin tells you, so it wasn't a big surprise. I'd like to answer the question you had before. I didn't get the opportunity to about the different. And everybody did such a great job in giving that information that there's very little to add. But in the Byzantine Empire, which was the Western or the Eastern Roman Empire, King Constantine or Emperor Constantine, he needed to do something to heal the fracture in his empire.
Yes.
So he declared that all the solar religions, which are focused on the sun, and he personally worshipped Sol Invictus, the invincible sun, who gave him a sign in the sky before battle, and Teutonica, in this you will triumph. So Christianity he saw as another solar religion because you had the sun, and you had the 12, it would be the zodiac signs normally, but here was the 12 apostles. And then you had the birth, the life, the crucifixion, the resurrection. And as had been pointed out, those were common themes in antiquity in many cultures. And December 25th was, among other things, the day of Sol Invictus, the invincible sun. So he declared that all the... and Mithra was included in that list. Hercules was included in that list. That's why Hercules Invictus.
Oh.
So he declared that for everybody in the empire who had a solar deity, December 25th was their birthday. So that's how it took root there. And they have a Santa Claus.
How interesting. How interesting that is. Again, it's tying things together. You know, the quote, connecting the dots to seek truth.
Uh-huh.
Well, we tonight we are connecting a lot of dots here. Would you not agree? We really are, and it's amazing going from one spiritual calling to another, and seeing the parallels that are really there. That is absolutely mind-boggling. I really would love to go into that more at some point. Now, I got a question. I'm going to ask a general question. I'm going to ask everyone if you have the answer to this. And the question is, we all know what candy canes are, right? Candy canes, and they have a red stripe on a white candy, and it's shaped like a cane. Do you have any idea who invented it and what it was symbolized of? Anybody?
Actually, yes.
Yeah, go ahead, Al.
Okay, go ahead. Go
as
ahead.
As far as I know, if I remember correctly, it was done by, I believe, a bishop. Might have been in Germany. I'm not positive. But the shape of it is a shepherd's crook.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah, that's what we
it
were saying.
Was, I don't know the specificity of the color, but it was actually made to give to the children in the church to keep them quiet.
To keep them quiet? Okay. So there was a real reason behind that. There was a motive here, and that's wonderful. That part
I don't know about the colors, though. I've never.
Maybe one of you
other nice people know about that.
I heard.
I've seen candy canes that also have red and green on a white cane. I've seen it that way also. Yeah, Michael, Diane, any other comments about that?
Well, I think the red, white, and green are like a modern version of the color scheme.
Yes.
It's the Christmas colors. But I think the red is for the blood of Christ. And the white, I think the white is the purity of Christ, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That does make
sense.
Yeah.
That does make sense.
But definitely the shepherd's crook.
Oh, shepherd's crook.
That Jesus was the good shepherd.
Uh-huh.
And he died for our sins with his blood. And then the red. And I think the white is for the purity. I could be wrong about the white, but I think it might be.
Also, I just wanted to mention, too, that the shepherd,
sure.
the good shepherd, I know I saw a statue in one of my library books, and it showed Apollo as the good shepherd. And they said underneath there, they said that it was directly taken from Apollo being the good shepherd that we transferred that to Christ, our modern Christianity.
Well, didn't Apollo have the lamb on his shoulders?
Yes, Apollo also had the lamb on his shoulders, and that's how the Greek statue was. Now, Hercules would know more about that, but that's what it said in the library book, that it was from Apollo.
Interesting.
Now, another interesting thing is, you know, you get the word Jerusalem and Jerusalem in our Urantia book. I was just reading in the archaeology magazine yesterday that they said that the actual beginning of that word was from the Canaanite god. And I wondered, I thought, well, that's not a Jewish name, Jerusalem. I thought it was always Jewish, didn't you?
Jerusalem.
Yeah, Jerusalem. Yeah. But it's not. That's a Canaanite word for the god that ruled the Canaanites, the sun god, a sun god. And it's in my archaeology magazine.
Thank you. Thank you again. Wow.
Well,
we're learning a lot tonight. That is for sure. Last night, I read the story of the birth of Jesus in Michael and Diane's wonderful podcast program. And I really would like to recommend to our listeners to go to the website for the fellowship, which is www.urantiabook.org and urantiabook.org. And then you can read or even listen to the Urantia book. It's all on there. And if you go to this fourth section of the Urantia book, if you go to the fourth major section, it's the life and teachings of Jesus. And I guarantee you, you will not put that down. It is an amazing, amazing amount of information with incredible detail. I'm always knocked out about the detail of the descriptions of Jesus' life. And if you go to the birth of Jesus and read that tonight or tomorrow, I think that you'll be inspired and it will answer a lot of questions because of the details of it and some very surprising facts that I've never heard anywhere except in the Urantia book. And I think that you'll find it quite interesting. We only have a few more. Hercules, how many more minutes do we have? About five?
Around 6 minutes, yes.
Oh, 6 minutes. All right. So why don't we do this? Take a minute, each one of you, and just give us your final thought, about a minute's worth, about December 25th, Christmas. Diane, please start.
Well, I have conflicting things there because my mother was raised a Seventh-day Adventist, and her mother was named after Ellen White. And I found out that the Urantia book was brought about by a Seventh-day Adventist family. So I had already read my mother's books by Ellen White saying, you know, just like the Urantia book, that Jesus was not born on December 25th. So I had conflicting views about that. So I just celebrate both.
Good for you. So do I. And why not? We need all the celebrations we can get, especially in these times. Would you not agree?
Right. So we just celebrate both.
Party. I totally get that, Diane. Thank you so much. Michael, please, about 60 seconds, just your final thought.
Okay, final thought. Love December 25th, and I'll tell you one reason I really love December 25th, the music. I have a music degree from UC Irvine, and that's where I met my lovely wife, Diane. But December 25th in churches and as a caroler, because, you know, there were a number of years where I would go caroling with a caroling group, employed with a caroling group professionally.
Mm-hmm.
So the churches and these caroling groups and doing parties and things like that have been very lucrative for me throughout my life. So, and I love the music. There's slow music. There's celebratory music. Yeah. December 25th is great. Love the music.
We love both.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Michael, I totally get what you're saying. Absolutely. The most beautiful music to celebrate the 25th. And you can't help but love all the different kinds of music, too.
Right.
It's just every kind of music you could mention that has to do with Christmas. So totally get that. Thank you, Michael, so much for that. Hal, how about yourself?
Well, December 25th, it's just wonderful in that all of the magic and fantasy and romance that goes with the date. It's a wonderful thing in the middle of a very dark time. And to celebrate it for that alone, and then you get Midnight Mass, which has got to be the most beautiful church service I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I totally agree with that. Thank you. Thank you so much, Hal, for that. Hercules, please, a final thought.
Over the years with our kids, we exposed them to as many of the different holidays and their meanings as we could, because we didn't know where they would wind up with their spirituality. My eldest wound up getting presents for most of the month of December, because we had Christmas and Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and Yule. You name it, they had presents for it. And now, in terms of my life now, we celebrate whatever other people celebrate and wish them well in whatever they believe. And I have a 12-day practice that I do from December 25th to January 5th, which corresponds with the 12 days of Christmas. And it's Hercules' labors through the zodiac.
Oh,
and
yes,
I plot out
love
my
that.
Following year in terms of my spiritual journey.
Oh, I love that. Oh, thank you for sharing that, Hercules. Truly wonderful. I would have to say at the end of this that I always love this holiday, the 25th, because it brings loved ones together. It brings friends, relatives, people you haven't seen for a very long time, either in person or through Christmas cards or phone calls or now emails. It brings us together with love. For celebrating life and celebrating each other. And I always just think of that time as one of the high point of the year. Thank you all. My love to each one of you for sharing all your wonderful stories on this podcast. And I just so appreciate your pitching in and sharing your memories. So this is Nick Curto for Nick Curto Presents the Urantia Book. Wishing everyone, all the listeners here, much love, Merry Christmas, and a very, very happy New Year. Much love to you all. Thank you,
and
goodbye.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank
God
you very much.
You.
Enjoy
and
the holidays.
Pleasure.
To talk to you.
Pleasure. Absolutely pleasure.
And thanks
good
to
night,
everybody
all.
Who shared your stories. It's great talking to you. Happy holidays. And I will talk to most of you on Wednesday.
I'm
looking forward to that as well.
All right. God bless you all.
God bless you all. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
You too.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
And thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you called and you're in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourselves here, or whether you'll be checking out our show later on. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys, amazing adventures, happy holidays, and a blessed New Year. We're going to close with If You Can Dream by Virginia Ackley.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will
heal. Take care,
but
much love,
y'all.